Greetings, this is Jan Thielen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. There's so many things going on the ranch here. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, we're having just incredible flyovers. And last night was my birthday. We had a wonderful birthday party. And it was quite a treat because it ended up with, later on in the evening, with a beautiful ship flying right over the house. And got it on film. It powered up all the way through, and that was one of my birthday wishes, that we would get a very large ship flying over the ranch. And so was granted that, and that was awesome. But they seem to be flying everywhere right now. It's getting pretty crazy. And I want to bring on Brooks Agnew. I was going to give a big bio and everything else, but Brooks been an old friend of the ranch and myself, and everybody knows him. He has X Squared Radio. He's delving into electric vehicles. He's got set up inner earth expeditions. I mean, I could go on and on with all the things he's into, but I'd rather just get him on the air and get down to it, because we're always short for time. There's so much to talk about. So, Brooks, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. Oh, I'm so glad I'm a friend of the ranch.
Yeah, you're part of the family. So, one thing, I would love to talk about some of the experiences. We haven't really had much time to recap what's been going on here. And I know that you were just here recently and gave a talk with Robert Dean, who had a cosmic top secret clearance. We had Neil Kramer, Mel Fabregas was here, Michael Tellinger. There's so many. Jenny Wong was here. Who am I missing? I know I'm missing somebody, but I don't know. It'll come. But we had such an incredible group here, an incredible lineup, and it was funny as everybody just came together like one big family, and we had one ship after another after another. We have those up on the website if people want to see them that came in during this conference, but there's so much more going on here. I'd love to hear your take on what you experienced here during the conference.
Well, I thought it was incredible. We had some rather cool weather when it first started, and I thought, oh, gee, it's going to be cloudy. We're not going to be able to see any stars. But as soon as it got dark, the skies opened up, and the stars were gorgeous. But the people were amazing. I loved having it early enough in the year where we could have the big bonfire. And I thought we were going to sit around the bonfire and drum. But then Bob, Dean started telling stories, and somebody handed him a cigar, and somebody else handed him an adult beverage, and that was all it took. I mean, the next 3 hours was like a one solid lecture. He was in heaven. We were in heaven. It was really great. And you're absolutely right, James. It was like Michael and myself and Bob Dean and let's see, it was Michael Tellinger, myself, Bob Dean, and the British guy, Kramer.
Yeah, Neil Kramer.
I mean, it was like we had known each other our whole lives. That was the greatest panel I've ever seen. I've seen them all over the world. And you always get the panel participants bickering and fighting amongst one another. And we were like one solid message. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I thought too the way that came down with Mel Fabregas with Veritas Radio was there doing the MC for the asking the questions for the panel, which went really well. And Mel saved us all by absorbing that entire solar flare with his face out in the field, which was also quite a feat. So we're gonna have to get him a Superman cape, and
that was so good.
Yeah, but that was quite interesting. But
those that weren't there, we got talking during the day at James's. It was one of the days before the main lecturing started. And before we knew it, 4.5 hours had gone by, and we were just mesmerized by the whole group talking. And the sun just went, shined on one side of Mel's face, and he looked like what was it, Richard Dreyfuss in Close to the Third Kind. It just looked like a 50-50 bar, and we just razzed him the whole weekend about absorbing the entire solar flare with his face and saving us all. which he was proud to do.
Oh, yeah. I think we should actually put a picture of him up like that and just say, you know, talk about his contact experience here and seeing the ships, and then show a picture of him with his sunburned face up there, just like.
You know, that's one of the things I love about the ranch, the sanctuary that you've created there. In this genre, there are celebrities that have risen to the very top of the echelon, but they've done so with a message of fear and darkness and conspiracy. And I have to emphasize that the feeling of frivolity and joy and bliss at the sanctuary, at the ranch there in Trout Lake, has been there since the first day I arrived in 2006. I love it there.
Yeah, it's a whole different energy. And what's funny is people come here, they just unwind and open up and reveal, you know, some of the deepest, darkest secrets. You know, they feel safe, and they give us information that they would give nowhere else, which was, I love the fact that Robert or Bob Dean actually talked about the bases on the moon and the Mars and how, you know, the shuttle program is just window dressing. And, you know, coming from a man with his credentials, I think was one of my highlights of the conference, because I've been talking about this for a long, long time, that we, you know, do not need these massive rockets, you know, the firecrackers to send astronauts up on and things of that nature, because we do have these anti-gravity and counter-gravity ships that can do it very effortlessly and other technologies. And, you know, speaking of technology, I know that, well, you and I both know the same person that will remain nameless, but, you know, who has these kind of technologies. And you're working on some technologies of your own, getting out these electric cars. And, you know, that electric truck is the one I have my eye on.
Well, you know, one of the challenges, and I talk with great minds in the electric vehicle industry almost on a weekly basis. And I'm totally amazed at the efficiency of the drives, the permanent magnet drives, the high voltage inverters, different things that are being brought into the electric vehicle industry. But that being said, it's a little like putting a space shuttle on four wheels. Nobody can afford it. The big challenge, and it's one that you know, our company has been successful in doing, is getting the price down so the average person can afford it. That's what the real challenge is. Yeah, we could make it a little more gold-plated, but no one could drive it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things. I know, I feel, I have a very strong feeling, I know these technologies exist, but, you know, you could put something in that vehicle once you had it going that would be probably the size of a small pie plate, that would generate all the electricity you needed, and actually you could actually lift it off the ground with it if you wanted. But I know those technologies exist, and having that foundation there, I think it's going to be very simple one day to just, you know, implement some of these other technologies that will allow you to drive the wheels off that thing, you know, without having to stop at gas stations.
Well, I'll put it this way, we're holding space for it. Mm-hmm. Myself and Robin and others have been to dozens of labs, and we've spoken to hundreds, literally hundreds of inventors in many countries about this mysterious solid-state charger that you can stack them together, and they take up about the size of a small microwave or smaller than that even, and they'll recharge your batteries all day. Without using sunlight, without plugging it into anything, mm-hmm. We haven't seen it yet. Now, there are rumors out there that somebody's got a little, you know, 50-cent piece-sized solid-state generator that puts out a few watts. If that's true, it should have no trouble going into manufacturing. And I will tell you right now, on the air, there is a spot in a VMC vehicle for that generator, if you've got it.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing is one, creating the safety net so you can, you know, create a vehicle like that and you know, keep from getting some cement shoes or something. Although, but you know, that I think that's one of the main things that's holding this up is that the powers that be have pretty much made people, so many people disappear, and, you know, Stanley Meyer and others that have created, you know, the hydrogen burning vehicles and things like that, that
I don't know. I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist. I do read it and I hear it and I listen to it and I listen to the explanation as to what really happened, and I have my doubts, but they don't really have to do that, James. All they really have to do is prevent us from having access to capital, and the idea will starve itself out, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, I lived that experience and went through that and saw people's labs and get blown up and families threatened. And actually, one guy who had a device ended up in a pool of blood. You know, they found him laying next to his car with something ate his insides out. It was pretty ugly. But, you know, that does seem to be happening out there. And unfortunately, until we get the populace behind this and some kind of a justice system that is going to go after the perpetrators of these events, I think it's going to be really hard to get this out.
Well, you're right. It will. But the good news is that there's a tremendous demand for it. Mm-hmm. And the other good news is that although the petroleum moguls don't want to see something other than gasoline being used to drive back and forth to work, the electric companies, the utility companies, do want to see electricity being used to drive back and forth to work. And electricity is 100% American made. Mm-hmm. So you have two power moguls that are now squaring off, two titans fighting over the American highway.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take. I know that GM, you know, destroyed the electric car and the battery, I guess the liquid battery and a few other things out there. But I do think that the demand for that and the public awareness now has reached an all new high, and it's just a matter of time. And hopefully, it does open up here in the United States. That would get, you know, the jobs back. It would get the economy going forward, and it'd just be a great shot in the arm for America. But, you know, what I'm seeing too is a lot of these technologies are going to be coming out, you know, in Japan or China or some other country, you know, especially once they get their nuclear problem out of the way, which is probably why they have a nuclear problem, you know.
Well, I can tell you right now that China, Japan, and India lead the world in development of electric vehicles right now. They have to, because they don't have oil reserves like the other countries of the world, and they don't have the economic buying power that it takes to sustain a country of 2 billion people in cars. Uh-huh. They have to come up with alternatives, and they have to do it on the front end of their economic boom. And that's why you're seeing them develop the vehicles. Now, that being said, none of those vehicles, not a single hubcap, will you see in this country. Because, well, there's two reasons. One is a little piece of legislature called the Buy America Act. So you'll see no government orders for any electric vehicles that are not made in this country. I'm glad to see it. It's way too late, but it's good to see. The second is the NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is constantly writing new statutes to improve, as they call it, the safety of the vehicles. None of the electric vehicles meet those standards at this time. They all have exemptions, set-asides, to allow them to bring small numbers of them in this country for demonstration purposes. But they have a long way to go to make these things safe enough to drive on the American highway.
Yeah, I saw one electric vehicle, and it had six wheels. It had three wheels on each side, and they were racing a Porsche with it, you know, over there in Japan, and it just kicked its butt, you know. It's like, yeah, in a video, it was pretty amazing, and they seem like that technology is down. All they need is a better charging source or a power source, and they've got a vehicle that was extremely safe, very powerful, and extremely fast, you know. And I'm sure it's going to be pretty high dig, you know, if they do come out with that on any kind of mass production, but they have done it. You know, they have put together a vehicle. And I guess it has a little electric motor on each wheel. All six wheels have a motor on it.
You have those out there. There are three drawbacks with those. One is, of course, spare parts. Mm-hmm. Not only do you have to have spare parts down at your local dealership to be able to fix the car, but you got to keep spare parts on the market for 20 years. That's a little bit difficult to do if you've invented a new motor that only you make. The second thing is, those are wonderful on dry pavement, but when you go to hit the brakes, the regenerative braking, or on water or ice or snow, they're having real problems with those things being controlled, because the wheels break loose so easy because the motors have such torque, and the vehicles lose steering. So it's a lot more complicated than it looks. Believe me, it took a while to figure out how to do that powered by gasoline, and it'll take a while to figure out how to do it with electricity. Again, that's kind of over-complicating the horse. It can be done a lot more simply. What it really boils down to is, do people want to drive 300 miles on a charge? Do they really want to recharge in 10 minutes? Do you have any idea how much energy that is? 40, 50, 60 kilowatts transferred in 15 minutes into a vehicle? That's a lot of power. That's like starting a 100 horsepower motor. Not many electric companies are going to let you draw that much power for that short amount of time. It causes parts of town to brown out.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a problem. Now, what about this? Somebody I was talking to, I'm trying to remember who that was, but he actually put a solar panel, you know, put a few solar panels in the back of his. He has a car with electric motor on it and everything. And he keeps driving that thing. He doesn't even have to charge it. Just the amount he drives.
We have integral solar panels in our vehicles. They don't put out a whole lot, but I will tell you this. Under certain conditions, like a few, you know, 10, 12 miles a day driven, like normal commuter, you can go months without plugging the vehicle in. We've already seen that. Now, the solar panels are only, at best, 19% efficient. So it takes a lot of solar panels to put out a couple of kilowatts, and it takes probably 30, 35, sometimes 40 kilowatts to recharge a complete battery. So do the math. You're going to be in the sun for about 3.5 days to charge up your vehicle if that's the only source you have.
Yeah, to totally charge it. Now, what about this nanotechnology? There's a newspaper article here locally about this young kid that created these nano solar tubes, I guess, that are putting out. They're super efficient. I can't remember how many times more efficient they are than a regular panel. And they also have a paint, like a solar paint. You could just paint the whole car, you know, with this.
Yeah, the paint is the thin film technology. It's been out for a long, long time. Not very efficient, about 4 or 5% efficient. The crystal technology right now is, I'm going to say, the most economical efficient, and it's between 12 to 19%. It depends on whether you put glass over it or polymer over it. But you do bring up a good point. These nanotubes and nanocrystals, and how these are formed in microliquids, and then they're either UV cured or shocked into shape. They're very expensive to produce right now. Like a normal panel will cost you, say, $400. A nano panel would cost you about $4,000. But the cost will come down someday, and nanotechnology is where we need to go. It's not organic chemistry. It is not random chemistry. It's mechanical chemistry, and it's very, very efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be the way to go. I saw an article where this guy was saying you just paint your barn, you know, with it, your big metal barn with it, and you have all the power you need, I guess, because you have such a large surface.
That's right. You need a lot of surface area and a rigid background, like a metal roof on a barn is a perfect backing for that kind of thin film.
Hard to drive your barn around, though.
That's about what it would take if you wanted to drive around. You wouldn't believe how much energy these cars take.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll have to figure something, another different program out. But anyway, I have a really good feeling that it's not too far away that we're going to take a quantum leap in technology and not just be driving electric vehicles, but vehicles that have counter-gravity or anti-gravity. And not only will you be able to drive them forever, you know, drive the tires off them, you won't need tires because you won't need roads either, you know, if you get there.
I like the idea, and you know, if we could get, as a planet, if we could get to where when the technology arrives, there's also the financing, or maybe we grow past the financing, or we've got some methodology where that kind of technology can actually reach the consumer, we could change the world, no question about it, and it would continuously change.
I think that's one of the big threats that, you know, UFOs pose, you know, to the status quo is, you know, when you take an extremely advanced race of beings coming here that, you know, have fearless technology, they have the ability to cure probably any disease very effortlessly and they don't burn oil and they're peaceful, they stand for universal peace, and their technology could actually enforce that peace and probably even a nonviolent way, who knows. But, you know, that would be such a threat to the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the oil industry, all of those. Any kind of advanced culture like that, and especially if they knew more about God and the universe than our religions, then there would be a very... sincere threat. It would be very hard to control the masses, you know, once they knew the real history of Earth and the true origin of man's soul and his own divinity. Then, you know, there's an old saying that an awakened God is very hard to control or handle.
Well, you always bring up a good point, James, and that is probably at the core of most of the problems we're having now today. Yeah. In our world, we're seeing, you know, the folks down at Wars R Us,
yeah,
keep us at war with one another just enough, you know, not enough to where one side wipes the other side out, but every once in a while you're going to get a black eye or you're going to get a few thousand here, a few thousand there. It sounds horrible, and it is. The sad part is that those same power brokers are the ones selling weapons and loaning money to both sides.
Exactly.
Somebody's making a lot of money and maintaining a lot of control because they're keeping us fighting with each other.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always wonder, too, at what point do, you know, the American people step back and say, wow, maybe there might be, you know, a national karma involved in this. I mean, we can't keep... You know, we're in six wars now. Three we know about. Three are kind of covert. And you look at what's happened and how many millions of people have been killed. You know, innocent children, women, you name it. And you look at that and you go, at what point do the American people step back and say, you're no longer going to use our military for your corporate brute squad. This has got to end. And at what point do they actually wake up to their own personal God connection and see that, you know, everybody's a child of God and in all their diversity, and maybe it's time to end this madness?
Well, I'll share something with you. As I was flying home, we were in the Portland airport, and as usual, the inspection lines were rather long and slow, and this woman ahead of me was about to be searched, and people were being quiet and didn't want to stand out because the TSA was being particularly nasty that day. And all of a sudden, you hear this woman go, "No, I am not doing it. Osama bin Laden is dead. I thought you guys were going home." And wow, everybody looked up like, what the heck is this woman saying? You know, this is a Caucasian woman saying this.
Uh-huh.
And the woman says, "No, ma'am, there are still plenty of threats out there, and we are here to stay." And this woman looked around, Everybody was about halfway in and out of the plastic tub with their shoes or their hat or something, looking at her, and she said, "I want my country back." You could hear a pin drop for about 5 or 6 seconds, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to get really bad, really fast, and it didn't. Everybody put their heads back down, and they put their clothes in their bin, and they kept going. And I thought they were going to sack that woman up and haul her off, but they didn't. Everything settled down, everything got quiet, and everything just kept going. And I thought, you know what? That's exactly the way it happened in 1941 when the Jews were asked to put their clothes in the tub and head off to the slaughter. Mm-hmm. 6 or 7 TSA agents controlled 500 people with nothing but the intimidation that they could make you disappear forever if you raised your voice against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are in that state. You know, it's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, kudos to that woman for actually standing up. I would love to give her a big hug, you know, for bringing that out. But, you know, the problem with that, with this whole thing going on, there's just no common sense. I know that our beloved leader just signed this act. It was, I guess, the Rural Something Act. I don't know what it's called, but you know, they just signed this thing into, there's no vote, nothing on it. Just created one of his programs.
Executive order.
Yeah, and now I guess he's got the TSA, he's got the DOD, Department of Defense, he's got all these people in this mass grouping that are going to go around to all the rural farms, and if you're not operating the way they think you should be, you know, if you're not growing Monsanto crops and you're not producing, you know, using the herbicides and Roundup and all the other stuff, you know, this is where it's going to go to. They can, like, basically take your farm or pull you in and tell you you need to start producing more and, you know, getting with their program or else, you know. So.
Oh, you're talking about the new Food Safety Act.
No, there's another one. There's a Food Safety Act, but there's another one out now. It's the Rural Something Act. I don't know if it's a Rural Farmers Act or Rural Something Act. I don't know what the name of it is, but rural is the first part of it. And when I saw that, I went, oh, my God. And they had a TV commentator saying, so what? You're going to go knock on, you know, Farmer Fudd or whatever's door and tell him that if he doesn't, you know, use your seed, your technology, your chemicals, that he loses his farm, you know? And pretty much it, you know, pretty much where it's going. So I think people need to really wake up and look at some of these executive orders that are going out and seeing if there's one shred of constitutionality to them, because there's nothing, you know, there. It is. It's like, you know, we're back in, you know, Nazi Germany.
I had a woman come on my program not long ago. She's, I think, third generation behind an American farmer who signed the CRP. The CRP is basically a crop vacation program, mm-hmm. where the federal government pays a farmer not to farm on his land.
Oh, yeah.
She's third generation now on this farm, and she wants to start farming. Mm-hmm. And the government has told her that the food rights to that land belongs to them. Even though it was her grandfather that signed the agreement, it passes from generation to generation. Nobody can ever farm that land again without federal approval.
Boy, that's you know, I just hear war stories like this over and over and over again, and they make no common sense. And I mean, we're running into that here as well, where we've tried to jump through all their hoops, and they keep changing the hoops and, you know, creating more bureaucracy. And I look at the paperwork we've done so far, and it's a stack of paperwork, probably, I would say, 7 inches tall now, you know,
wow.
of paperwork and bureaucracy and crap that we've had to go through. And even after going through all that, what we realize is from the very beginning, their intention was to never allow us to have any kind of gatherings here. that they never did intend. We went through all this legal fees and paperwork and stress and harassment and everything to get through this process. And finally, we went and dotted all of our I's and gave them everything they needed. And they just said, screw you, basically. And we're back at square one again. So wow. It's unbelievable when I see this happening. I just wonder who these people are. You know, they're definitely not servants of the people. They have nothing to do with anything good, you know, or the highest and best good of the community. And even with the whole community behind you, and another giant stack of letters where people have written in that have gotten healed or had, you know, incredible experiences here, and they're all for it. You know, all the businesses here are all for these gatherings to continue. We had not one negative letter in complaint of us, you know, having events here. So even with all that, it still doesn't matter. You have these little Napoleonic people in positions that can just make your life hell. And I think that's one of the problems now is that, you know, we've given our power away to these positions and people who have betrayed that trust. And the whole system now is self-serving. It serves itself. It no longer serves the people. And, you know, and the same thing, look at Social Security. We trusted people to take care of us, and they're taking care of themselves. They've always been taking care of themselves, and that's why it's in a mess. So I'm just wondering when we're going to step back and say, you know, wait a second. You know, we're not sure if we really need you anymore. You know, here, you know, there's no service being provided here. You know, maybe it's time to rethink this whole program, you know. And
I wonder if Washington is one of the states that has signed a sovereignty act. You know, there's been 32 states that have signed them now. And it's kind of a modern version of nullification. Nullification was where prior to the Civil War, states adopted a policy of nullification which said if the federal government passed a law that affected the commerce in that state, it was null and void unless the state legislature ratified it. That was the foundation of the Civil War. Well, we can't do that anymore because of laws against secession. But you can pass state sovereignty acts. And what this does is it allows the states to act as sovereign organizations. And once you hit the number 37, you now have a two-thirds majority of the 50 states of the United States. The reason that's important is because that's the level of ratification you need in the Constitution for a constitutional convention. Mm-hmm. So if you have one, or if you start one with an Athenian agenda, that is to say, we're going to change these four things or these 10 things, and all 37 states have signed on to it in advance, you could have your convention open and shut in one day, the Constitution amended, and the federal government has to comply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, you bring back the Constitution and make it the supreme law of the land, which it already is, although it's been pretty much trashed. You know, basically all these other elements would just have to kind of disappear if they didn't meet those requirements. And I see more taking it down to a personal level, not only just state sovereignty, but it needs to be a reflection back into, personal sovereignty where people can set some boundaries and say, you know what, enough's enough. You know, this is just out of control.
Well, the Constitution was always meant to be a restrictive document. It basically said, look, if we didn't say you could do it here in this document, you can't do it. But the Supreme Court and all kinds of court precedent have changed that. Now, that being said, the Constitution's only been amended 27 times, and the first 10 of those were before it was ratified. So it's only been changed 17 times since it was written. That's not bad. The problem is that legal precedent has created a lot of openings for the federal government to do things. For instance, form the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Department of the Interior, you know, EPA. These kinds of things are not constitutional, and yet they control trillions of dollars of tax money, and it's taxation without representation. The bad part is none of those people are elected. They're appointed by the president.
Yeah. And the president is appointed by the New World Order. So
I can tell because the other day I saw the string disappear into the back of his neck while he was talking.
Yeah, it's all appointed. Everybody knows it's all appointed, and it's all being run by, you know, a small group of families. And I think that's pretty much common knowledge now. The next step is how long that's going to be able to run its program. And it seems to be hopefully, you know, being exposed and getting ready to fold in on itself. You know, with Spain, you know, with its revolution going on, which nobody even hears about. Here in the States, you don't hear a peep about it. Greece and Ireland and all these other countries, they're pretty much throwing them out. They're throwing out the banks.
Exactly. You know, we only have 535 of them if you count the Senate. If we can't find 535 smart people that can be trusted in this country, we're in pretty bad shape.
Starting to sound like Sodom and Gomorrah, you know.
I was just going to say the same thing, but I just don't want to see the whole thing turn to a pillar of salt. You
know? Yeah, bring me one honest politician. I'll spare Capitol Hill, you know.
We could fix it, you know.
Yeah.
I think that there are good people out there, and even some of them are probably in office, but they can't do anything because they have these, you know, 2- and 3-decade-old dynasties that are controlling everything.
Mm-hmm. I know one thing that they have, you know, there's people out there like, you know, Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich and quite a few others. I really don't follow politics or watch TV, so I'm not that informed on this, but I keep running across Dennis Kucinich up there and Ron Paul just ripping on these guys, exposing them, saying it like it is. You know, talking about how these wars are unconstitutional, you know, the grievous actions that these guys have been doing and the whole bankster bailout program and how all the money went offshore and where did it go? You know, where did all this money go? It went all to the big corporations. It didn't, you know, nobody got a bailout or the, you know, the little people all lost their homes. But, you know, you look at, there's just a few white knights there right now that are, you know, tell it like it is, but I'm really hoping that number starts growing and that there becomes, you know, a huge, you know, a peaceful revolution from the inside out that people start awakening and go, wait a second, you know, we're all one here. We're all one people.
That's the good thing is that we do have a process for peacefully doing this. Mm-hmm. And in 1 year, 3 months, we could do it.
Oh, yeah.
All it really takes is good communication. You don't have to spend a lot of money. It just takes good communication, good exposure, a good clean message, and a candidate that will listen to the constituency.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty much. It's sad, but, you know, we know how the politicians start out. You know, a lot of them start out good, and you know, they just get caught here and there and have a little file on them and take a few bucks here and a few bucks there they shouldn't. And pretty soon they're in the back pocket of you know, the powers that be. And they just go along with the system because if they don't, they're ousted. They're either publicly assassinated or financially or physically taken out, you know, one or the other. So it's sad, but, you know, you've got to have somebody in there with just impeccable integrity. And, you know, I think people like Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, you know, people can't say, hey, this is political. It's not political. One's a Republican and one's a Democrat. I'm just talking about, you know, personal integrity here. These people have, you know, stood up and just told it like it is and, you know, see the beast for what it is.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I don't know if, you know, you have to have a character flaw to think about politics, Because, you know, those people that are really smart and don't have character flaws, they have a tendency to be very successful in the private sector. So why in the world would they go into politics? It's kind of a catch-22. But think of it as public service. You're going to go up there, you're going to serve for 4 or 6 years, you're going to represent the people back home, and then you're going to go back home. And you're going to go back to the farm, or you're going to go back to the pharmacy, you're going to go back to the grocery store, or the auto mechanic shop, or the school where you came from. That's what it's designed to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We sure lost track of that. But, yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. I know from a higher level, you know, with the ninth wave coming in, which I know everybody felt that one, you know, on March 9th when that came in, the unity consciousness wave the Mayans talk about and the Earth's evolutionary process where you have to become frequency specific and match the Earth's ascension process to actually stay here. When you take all that into account, the bigger picture, you really see that this old program is unsustainable. It won't be able to function with the new frequencies and the new energies. And it's just a matter of time that it is going to implode on itself. And so now it's time.
That doesn't mean they're not going to try and hold on to it by force.
Oh, yeah. So they definitely, yeah. Oh, they'll definitely do everything they can to hold on to it. I mean, to the extent of having everybody else dead except for them. I mean, that they wouldn't lose, an ounce of sleep on that one, but basically these beings, it doesn't matter. It's a no-win situation. You know, they can go on their deepest underground base, but if the frequencies change, they're going to implode. You know, basically energetically, they will, their bodies will fail. They're going to flip out. They won't be able to function. It's no brainer. There's nowhere to go for these guys.
I like the idea of the underground bases though. You know, they need to realize that the cat's kind of out of the bag. You know, we know the bases are there. We know, we don't know how much money you spent on them, but we know they're pretty elaborate and they're plenty big to hold all of you. So why don't you just beat the rush? You know, why get caught in a traffic jam and worry about whether you're going to get there or not or forget something? Why not just get it all together now? Go ahead and get the moving van and everything and move in there now. Close the door and lock it, and we'll take it from here.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm all for that. I'm all for a little welding on the doors after it's shut too. But it's pretty insane. We're all in this together, and it's all about frequency. And there is nowhere to go but to ascend, you know, and go with this flow. And I don't care what kind of technology they think they have, you know, what kind of disease and plagues and chemtrails and psychotronics and all their little toys, you know, they can pull out. It's still not going to work. They're not going to function on a planet that's gone beyond that, their frequency, you know, their ability to function.
Hey, James, I don't know if you're watching the screen or not, but I think we have a caller from Washington, D.C.
Oh, we do. Let me see. Actually, I don't have one, but we could bring him on. You want to answer some questions?
Yeah.
Great.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, sir.
Hello, James. This is Ray from Washington, D.C. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great.
I would like to ask you if you can extend your show hours more than 1 hour. Sometimes you forget what time it is, you miss your show. And I've been listening through the years, you know. I never called you, but something got my interest tonight, what you just mentioned a few minutes ago, that President Obama, that is appointed with the Illuminati, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that deep in your heart, you know that he's not part of the dark entities, as a matter of fact, vice versa. He is a being of light, I know deep in my heart that he is, but according to Archangel Michael, his messages come constantly. I'm sure you know those websites, lightworkers.org. And want to let you know that he's a higher being, he's a master. He pretended on the beginning that he's with the Illuminati or the dark entities, you want to say, in the government. But he has been, with the Commander Ashtar, he has been cleaning whole Washington, D.C. From these people. You know, they've been illuminating them one by one. And I just wanted to, since you are very spiritual, to contact, channel your higher beings and ask about Obama. Obama is an ascended master to me. And to many other people who are, their eyes is wide open, they know he never brought the issue of extending the war. He's reducing the war gradually because the Creator does not change things in one day. And we never had president as smart as this one. Nobody catches him with any mistakes. Mm-hmm. Nobody has proven him doing anything wrong, except he didn't close Guantanamo in Cuba, but that's, he has his own reason.
Well, wait a second, though. Here's my question to you, is that we have to look at the campaign promises, and the promises were to end the wars, to bring people home. That was supposed to be done right away. And now we're still in three wars, and there's three others that we don't know about. So there's basically six wars we're in. They claim transparency. That's gone out the window. He said he was going to get rid of the Patriot Act. That went out the window. Actually, it's gotten even worse. And, I mean, I can go on and on with all the promises that were made, and I haven't seen one of them being kept. And we've moved more into a fascist state now than ever, and we have more wars going on than ever. The banksters have just completely pilfered the economic system, and I'm really trying to hope that this guy is playing some game and he's going to pull out an end card in the end. That would be awesome, yeah. But so far we can't deny the fact that he has not.
May I say something?
Made good on anything.
Sure. It was right before his he'd be appointed to, or right after he'd be appointed to be United States President. Beloved Archangel Michael, which I constantly read his messages and watch your program and I attend your website, everything. You guys are spiritual. I see you guys very spiritual, but comes to the point that if the Creator wants to change anything, he doesn't come, you know, smash everything apart. We are moving gradually to the new world, as you know. And he has to play the cards like a poker player, let's say, for the sake of just saying how he's playing the cards. Very gradually, he's having them checkmate. The time is not ready. I'm sure you know Salusa, and I'm sure you know, you read the materials from many other spiritual messages I cannot just think of right now because I'm talking to you guys. Yeah. But if you read some of these people's messages and you channel your higher beings, they cannot lie to you because you know that. If the higher beings, they say it as it is.
Well, the trick is whoever's bringing in that message, it still has to come through their mind and their belief system. And, you know, so we have to realize that, you know, although somebody is quoting Archangel Michael or saying they're channeling them or Ashtar Command or all these other groups that are out there that people are quoting, you know, we have to realize that human is fallible and that information has to come through their mind here where there's a distortion in it. And so if they are running some kind of a belief system or a program or whatever else, that information is going to be distorted. And I would love for that all to happen, to see that there is this big white hat program underway that's going to culminate in all of these New World Order boys and the banksters and the people destroying the environment and the oil companies and everything else go down. But you know, what I've seen so far, especially with the Gulf oil debacle, where everything was just turned over to BP, we were invaded, basically. And and a lot of money transferred hands there, and that people don't know about, that I have information about. So no, I mean, you look at all the situations. I'm going, wait a second. Well, when is one good thing going to be manifesting here?
I could see that there was a little bit of conflict between the White House and the oil companies there. He still has not let them go back into the Gulf and drill. I think we have one more caller, and that's with Ken down in Mississippi. Ken, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, James.
Right, well, we have a few moments, so make it quick.
I will. The World Council that you were talking about that was established by Obama is staffed by members of the Defense Department and high business and finance. What they have to do with rural councils, I don't know. And it was established by an executive order. An executive order is only binding to those persons employed by the executive branch of the government, no one else. And that's just a fooler that's been put over the over the people since 1933 when, you know, gold was taken from us. That's all I had to say. God bless you all.
Oh, wow, thanks so much.
Amazing.
That just nails it on the head right there, baby.
It does, doesn't it? Wow, wow. Yes, James, you need to go to multiple hours. 1 hour is not enough for your program.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, well, it's amazing the things we could cover. But, you know, a lot of people actually did totally believe in Obama. And I was saying, well, we'll see. You know, I think what they do, as soon as they go into office, they take them in there and they say, okay, you made a lot of promises and we're going to show you the Kennedy film. And that's it. You know, this is where you go with your program. And if you want to keep going forward and breathing and your family being okay and everything, then you're going to do our program. And anyway, that's my belief around that system.
It does seem that he doesn't have a whole lot of friends in Washington, even on the Democratic side. They're not going with him. I for one, would really like to see Ron Paul win. For one thing, he's the only candidate that I have heard say anything about getting rid of the Fed. And I think that's a number one priority there.
Oh, I do too. Several areas of that. And I would love to see Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich hook up independent and then actually have some kind of major investigative branch to investigate, you know, the authenticity of the polls and to make sure that people are really getting their votes counted and not rigged, you know, like they did with those electronic machines. And
I think
a total turnaround on this country.
I think it would be neat to see Dennis Kucinich as head of the Justice Department.
Oh, yeah, he would do it. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. You know, Brooks, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And we do. We need at least a 2 or 3 hour show. But
if you're open to it, you should come on my program tomorrow night in the second hour. And we'll finish this off.
That sounds good.
How about that? Do I hear applause out there?
Yeah, we could do that. We could go into that. We can talk about all the UFO activity going on up here.
That's what I want to talk about. Other people talk about politics. Let them do it.
Yeah, I don't like to get talk about politics. I get riled up, and when I look at what they say and what they do, and you know, that form of insanity where we do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I wonder how many times we're going to do it over and over again. You know, but. Looks like we're...
I hear somebody's cell phone going off.
Exactly. So, well, we're out of time. I guess we should be signing off here. So, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And
my pleasure. Anytime.
All righty. And, but anyway, stay tuned for Brooks Agnew's show. Now, when is your show again?
It's 5 to 8 Pacific right here on BBS Radio. And we'll have James on the 6 o'clock hour. I'll take care of some other business in the 5 o'clock hour. And then at 6 p.m. we'll bring James on and we'll just see what happens.
Sounds good. All righty. Well, Brooks, take care of yourself and be great talking to you again tomorrow.
Excellent. See you then.
All right. Anyway, this is James Gillen signing off. Have a great evening and watch the skies and don't lose that inner discernment, you know. you know, look at what people do and forget about what they say, because now is the time of doing. Have a great evening. Good night.